Okay, Parshas Tetzaveh has a lot of focus on the Big Day Kahuna, and that's true also in the Fourth Aliyah. The Fourth Aliyah, which talks about how the Kohanim are essentially identified and sanctified as Kohanim through the receiving of Gadim, but also through the Karbanos, for the whole process of them essentially being priestified. So that's an opportunity also to focus on the role of Bikkei Kahuna as a whole. And there is a Medrash that focuses on the way this Aliyah starts with a Zeh HaDavar as a reference to the role of Begadim in general. And the Medrash, so a nice essay about it here in the Asufas Narachos of Shiva Kenri Avner, Goldach Zechetzadik Lavracha, where he has a whole essay about this topic coming off the Pasuk, Azeh HaDavar Asher Tasa Lahem, the beginning of this Aliyah, the whole idea that this is the matter, this is the thing, and that this is the source of Kavod. We know that the Parsha identifies the Big Day Kahuna as the symbol of Kavod and Tiferes. And the role of Kavod is always a complex one. What exactly we want to do with Kavod and what we don't want to do with Kavod. We're told to run away from Kavod. We're told that Kavod is illusory, and Kavod is a distraction, and Kavod is the cause of all kinds of problems. And on the one hand, that's true. On the other hand, there is the appropriate Kavod. There are times when we are obligated in Kavod. So we find Kavod here specifically in the context of the Big Day Kahuna and of Begadim in general. This Medrash, which comes off of this Pasuk, this Medrash tells us that we don't really find Kavod except in association with Torah. And the reference here is to Yavetz. Yavetz, we find out, is Othniel ben Knaz. Othniel ben Knaz was the one who always wondered why more Talmid Chachamim don't name their sons Othniel. I have a cousin who's a Rashiva who named his son the middle name Othniel, so I at least appreciate that. But Othniel is the big hero of the Lamdanim. Othniel ben Knaz, the Gemara says in Masachas Tumura, that he restored the halachos that were forgotten after Moshe died. So many halachos were forgotten, and Othniel ben Knaz was such a lamdan, he was able to bring them back. He was able to be machzir, mitoch kopulo, all of these forgotten halachos. So we find kavod in the context of the Big Day Kahuna, in the context of Torah. That's what the Medrash emphasizes, and it says here in the Medrash Shmos Rabbah, V'chol Eilu B'schus HaTorah Shehaya Yagaba, that here Aaron worked in the Torah, and Yavetz worked in the Torah, and that's the source of Kavod. So we find that we have Big Day Kahuna to reflect that particular Maila, and we find Torah being the center of the Maila of Kahuna, and the center of everything associated with Kavod. And we find Medrash also tells us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made clothes for Adam HaRishon, so that was because he was also in the function of Kahuna, because before the Bnei Aaron were singled out as the source of Kahuna, so we know it was the role of the Bechor. So Adam HaRishon is the ultimate Bechor, or I guess the reverse ultimate. Ultimate really means last. Right? So he is the original Bechor, he's the Bechor of the whole world. So he was the first Kohen, so the clothes that were made for him were Big Day Kahuna, and they were also Big Day Shabbos. So this is Friday afternoon that Adam HaRishon gets his clothes. So the idea that we find the halacha requiring that there should be kavod for Shabbos shown in Lavush, all of this is a reflection of the role that Begadim play in terms of manifesting kavod. So we see it for the Kahuna, we see it for Big Day Shabbos, and we see all of this as intertwined with Torah. And the Rosh Yeshiva goes on to discuss, it's worth reading, this is one of his major themes in general, about how the whole existence of this world is lahalos, is sanitzotzos, is to give rise and to lift up the spark, to lift up the gashmius with the ruchnius. So too, here the idea of kavod and dress is about using the physical to call attention to the spiritual, and that's really why the whole world exists. So in a sense, the Big Day Kahuna reflect that in a very powerful way. And we also find, there's a Gemara, there's a drasha also from this Aliyah, that regarding the Kohanim, Tizman shebigdeyim aleihem kunasim aleihem, that their status of kahuna is fully realized only when they have the big day kahuna on. There's the whole discussion in the Rishonim, whether or not the prohibition to be served by a kohen is that tied only when the kohen is wearing the begadim. There's a whole discussion. So we find that the begadim are so central to the identity of the kahuna, that's the idea that the physical is utilized in order to represent the spiritual, and that's the whole reason for existence, that we're supposed to take the physical world and convert it into spiritual. This is also a major Purim theme. Maybe we'll have more time to talk about that a little bit. But the notion that that's what we're able to do, so that's what this parsha really represents. Rav Sham Shmuel Hirsch has an extensive comment about the Aliyah throughout, that the karbanos that we find here, the par and the ayal, that are all a part of this process of kahunifying, so that the par represents the office of the kahuna, which is bringing in Aaron, and the ayal is a very noble animal that represents the exalted and privileged position of the kohen himself, specifically the fact that he is an example to others. That's his whole reason for being within the Jewish people. And that's the reason of the Jewish people vis-a-vis the rest of the world. That was the pasuk we also had in Revi a few weeks ago, that Klal Yisrael's Meleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, the idea to be in the role of Kahuna is to be in this exalted position that will be a role model for the world. And that's what this animal represents, what this process represents, and all of this parsha calls attention to this. This idea of Zeh HaDavar, which also seems to convey importance, as we were noting. So the Oznayim LaTorah comments that it also is used whenever it comes up in the Torah, Zeh HaDavar. We know Davar is sometimes a way of saying speech. Davar is a form of the word Dibor, and it's a way of also calling attention to the importance of human speech. So the fact that Moshe's instruction is what also is necessary in order to make this happen, that shows the role of human speech and the kedusha of speech, and therefore that's also identified as an important part of the whole process, and that's part of the intent of Zeh HaDavar. The Gemara in Masechet Zvachim, Daf Peches, has a comment that we find the smichas aparshios of the Big Day Kahuna and the Karbanos. It's not 100% clear from that Gemara. Is it actually talking about this week's parsha, or is it talking about in Sefer Vayikra? That's a little bit of discussion. If you look in the Torah Tamima, there's a whole back and forth about this. But it seems that on some level, the Torah is trying to make a point by putting the Big Day Kahuna next to the Karbanos. And the idea, the Gemara says, is that both of them are Mechaper. Like, just like the Karbanos are Mechaper, so too the Big Day Kahuna are Mechaper. Which is a fascinating idea, because if you have to think about it, really they affect whatever they affect in different ways. A korban is mechaper in terms of a sacrifice. Big Day Kahuna are mechaper, we just said a minute ago, in terms of the expression of kavod. So it's more in a positive sense. So a korban means you get a kapara by giving something away, by killing something that you value and offering it. While the Big Day Kahuna, that's a source of honor and dignity that the person wears. It's really a very different type of kapara. But apparently we need both. And this kapara, so the Gemara goes through all the different ways how different parts of the Big Day Kahuna are mechaper. One of them is Lashon Hara. The Gemara tells us that the Me'il is mechaper for Lashon Hara. And that's possibly because of the bells that were there. The Gemara says, Yavo Davar Shebekol, the Echaper or Laveru Shebekol, that's something that makes noise, should come and atone for an Avera that involved sound, involved noise. And if that's true, so again, it's about converting this power into something positive. It's saying that the sounds, noise, was used to be destructive, so we should use this sound power to bring about something positive. Now, the Gemara does say that we always assume that the kapara for Lashon Hara is saras. So, is it saras, or is it the meal? So the Gemara says really both, that if you actually succeeded with your Lashon Hara and you caused damage, so then you need saras as the kapara. But if you didn't actually do any damage, just spoke Lashon Hara that nobody really cared about, nobody listened to you, you're not so popular, you're not so influential. So then it's the meal that's machaber. So that's not just a qualitative distinction, a quantitative distinction, right? It's not just saying, okay, up to a level 10 offense, you need this kind of a kapara, and a level 5 offense, you need that kind of a kapara. It reflects the fact that Lashon Hara as an aveira has a couple of different impacts to it and a couple of different types of offense. So if you actually cause people to be angry at each other, you cause people to separate from each other, so then you need the kapara of the saras, as Chazal also say, that this person made people separate from each other, caused divisions within society, so he should be divided from society. So he has to be taken out of the machane for a little while in order to reflect on that, in order to atone for that. But if he didn't actually cause any fighting or any division, nobody actually paid attention to what he was saying, there's still a kapara that needs to happen. There's still an atonement that has to take place because Lashon Hara corrupts your personality, corrupts your midos. So that's what the Mi'il is there to accomplish. Rav Schneer Kotler wrote an article once where he suggested that the idea of the Mi'il bringing about the kapara for Lashon Hara is that the Mi'il had tcheles, and tcheles, the Gemara says in Menachos, the whole symbolism of tcheles is tcheles dom l'yam, yam dom l'rakia, rakia dom l'kisei akavod. That it's the tcheles evokes the color of the ocean. The ocean gets its color from the sky. The sky is the color of the kisei hakavod, and that's the symbolism. So asked Schneer, so what's the point of this indirect? This is like that, is like that, is like that. The whole problem is somebody who speaks Lashon Hara, so very often it's an issue of perspective. You don't see a broad enough picture. You see this one little detail, and you think that that tells you the whole story, or that that's enough to condemn the whole person, so that's something you should be talking about. But if you had a broader sense of what's going on, you had a better perspective, so then you'd realize that that's not really the kind of thing to be saying. So the idea of this imagery of kind of pulling back farther and farther, this is like the ocean, and the ocean is like the sky, and the sky is like the Kisei HaKavod, you keep stepping back more and more until you see the whole picture. So that's essentially the impact that the Tcheles is meant to have, and maybe that's why the Mi'il is a kapara for Lashon Hara. The Gemara also suggests there's actually another division to be made, that the Ketores is Mechaper for Lashon Hara. And the difference is it public Lashon Hara or private Lashon Hara? A private Lashon Hara gets the Ketores because that is done privately, and the public Lashon Hara gets the Mi'il. So then we have a couple of divisions. But it highlights the fact that Lashon Hara has a couple of different levels of impact. And that's why the Chafetz Chaim, for example, we've mentioned in the past, the famous machlokas the Chafetz Chaim had with Yisrael Salanter, that the Chafetz Chaim said you have to ask Mechila for Lashon Hara even if the subject doesn't know about it. But he did make a distinction. He said that if it's Lashon Hara that was harmful, then you have to ask Mechila. But if it didn't accomplish anything, nobody believed you, nobody listened to you, so then you still need a kapara ben adam le'makom. You don't have to ask Mechila, you still have to do personal tshuva. So that's what really this Gemara is reflecting, with those different levels of impact, that if you actually hurt someone, so then that's what saras is for. If you didn't, there's still an aveira there, and that's what the meal needs to be in mechaper. And nowadays, we don't have any of these things. We don't have tzaras, and we don't have the big day kahuna, is what it seems like. There are those who interpret a Gemara Maseches Yuma to suggest that the big day kahuna are still mechaper even today. But on the Pashtus level, it seems like we don't have any of these kaparas nowadays. So it's another reason why Lashon Hara is a good aveira to avoid. But assuming that we're not able to do that, as no one is able, as the Gemara says, avak Lashon Hara, at least we're all caught up in. So what do we have left? So it seems like we have Torah. That's also what the Gemara talks about, that Talmud Torah is supposed to be a corrective to Lashon Hara. And some of the maskimim, some of those who wrote Haskamas to the Chafetz Chaim, some of the Dayanim in Vilna, Bitzalakon, Shlomikon wrote Haskamas to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, so they explained that even though there are many Talmid Chachamim who speak Lashon Hara, it doesn't mean that Torah automatically is a corrective. It means the Torah that is about Lashon Hara, the Torah that's about the subject, the more one is sensitive to these halachas, the more he's going to hopefully be able to undo the inner deviation that caused the aveira in the first place. So if we don't have the meal, then we have to learn about it, we have to study about it. It's like I mentioned last week, that these week's parshios, Truma and Tetzaveh, and Vayakal and Pekudei, all these parshios which have so much in all of Kachim, which we don't actually practice today, so it's actually an even better opportunity to focus on the symbolism, and we have this notion of Neshama Karim Sposeinu, that we have to try to make up for the lack of Karbanos, the lack of the Mishkan, by studying about it. So too, if we believe that we get a kapara through the Big Day Kahuna, so we don't have the Big Day Kahuna now, so we have to really invest our energies in studying about it, and in trying to understand the symbolism, and trying to understand what the focus is, so that we can attain that kapara in a different way. So we'll just say one more thing about one pasuk here, and then talk a little bit about Zachar. So the pasuk mentions the pasuk Vav. So it mentions the samta hamitznefes al roshov and asates nezer hakodesh al hamitznefes. So you should put the holy crown on top of him. So that's an important phrase. Nezer hakodesh is a sefer. Nezer hakodesh on kachim, a very beautiful sefer. But the Nezer HaKodesh has reference here, the Holy Crown. So the Oznayim LaTorah has a comment that it's interesting that we find that the crown, if I were to ask you who in the Torah is described as wearing a crown, so your guess would probably be king. But instead, what do we find? We find that who is identified with the crown? The Kohen. Now what is the king identified with? The Sefer Torah. And the Torah tells us the king has to have the Sefer Torah. So it says, Oznayim LaTorah, the point is that the real melucha comes from the Kohanim, who are focused on serving God. That's the real source of royalty and majesty in the world. And the functional kings that we have, they get their authority through studying Torah from the Kohanim. And that's the message. And that, again, continues this whole theme of what kavod really is in the world and how that kavod is represented. Okay, let's just spend a few minutes talking about Zachar. So there is an obligation to hear Parsha Zachar, and many assume that this laning that we'll do this week is the one time that we have an obligation in HaTorah to listen to Kriyas HaTorah. So we're all encouraged to come to shul for that opportunity. If you're here in Yeshiva, there's many Chashuva guests here this Shabbos. It's also a tremendous opportunity. So the statement that this is the one time a year that we're obligated to hear the Torah, Min HaTorah, is a little bit debatable on both sides. The sentiment is definitely there. It's possible there may be a few other times. Parshas Parah, the discussion comes up also. There may be other times where there's some angle that might be Min HaTorah. But the assumption that we have to hear Kriyas HaTorah this Shabbos, and that's an obligation of Min HaTorah, is based on a few premises, which are a little bit debatable. There clearly is a mitzvah in the Torah to remember Amalek. That is explicit in the Torah in Parshas Kisetze, in the section that we'll read the Shabbos, the Maftir from Parshas Kisetze, where the Torah tells us, Zachar es asher asalucha Amalek, and lo tishkach, we clearly have an obligation. And the Gemara says in Megillah that the double language of Zachar and lo tishkach, that means it can't just be mental, it has to be bepeh. You have to say it out loud. But that still leaves us a couple of questions. So, okay, let's assume that we have to say Zachar out loud, but how do we know that it has to be with a minyan? How do we know that it has to be with a Sefer Torah? And how do you know how often it has to be, and how do you know when it has to be? So all of those are not explicit in the Chumash. The assumption that there's an obligation of a minyan is really based on two Rishonim. It's based on the Rush and the Trumas Hadeshen. The Rush in Maseches Brachos, there's a lot of debate how to read the Rush. The Rush talks about Rabbi Elazar being Meshacher and Eved for a mitzvah rabbah, and it sounds like what the Rush is talking about is that the big mitzvah he needed was to have a minyan for reading Parsha Zachar. There is a lot of discussion how to read that Rush, but that's how it's often assumed. It's a source of a lot of controversy. But it sounds like you need a minyan for Parsha Zachar. And as the Trumas Hadeshen says the same thing, the Trumas Hadeshen is Truvas. He talks about somebody who said that he lives in a community that doesn't have a minyan. But he's going to go to a place with a minyan for Purim so he could hear the Megillah. So his question was, once he's doing that, should he go earlier to be there for Shabbos also? This week, it means he'd be there for a long week, but should he go earlier? Recently, Purim's been on Sunday a few times, it works out more conveniently. But should he go there early to be there for Shabbos Zachar as well? So the Shulman Sadeshin told him that not only is it a good idea for him to do that, but it's actually more important than going for Purim. Because the Megillah actually doesn't require a minyan. Megillah b'zman, you hear the Megillah in Purim, we don't have to have a minyan. But Zachar, that he seems to suggest that you need to be there for with a minyan min haTorah. So that idea that there's a requirement of a minyan min haTorah is an interesting idea. And again, others don't necessarily agree with this. It doesn't sound like this from the Rambam, doesn't sound like this from the Ramban. It's not clear that the other Rishonim agree with this, but many assume, at least practically speaking, that there is the obligation to have a minyan for Parshas Zachar, and that it has to be read from a Sefer Torah. Some suggest, hi.
Just going to ask, is there an extra minyan to hear with a minyan, simply because you can't really lay from Sefer Torah with obviously?
Right. So, well, first the Sefer Torah itself is also a chiddush, because it's not clear from the pasuk why you need the Sefer Torah. The Gemara darshins from the pasuk it has to be verbal, but maybe it doesn't have to have a text at all, and maybe it doesn't have to have a kosher Sefer Torah. So halacha, we assume that it does. Those who thought maybe it doesn't have to be kosher, maybe it could be a pasul Sefer Torah. Chaim Kanievsky and others talk about that. They don't accept that theory. Some suggest that the Sefer comes from the idea of the pasuk. So zos zikaron b'sefer. We should remember this b'sefer, and that the idea of the minyan reflects the fact that remembering Amalek is a function of the battle against Amalek, and that battle is really a mitzvah on the tzibor. It's not a mitzvah on the yachid. So therefore, the tzibor has an obligation to remember Amalek, and therefore it has to be done b'tzibor. So if that's the case, it would be a chovas Hayachid that has to be done b'tzibor, which would be different than how most understand Kriyas HaTorah. Many understand that Kriyas HaTorah normally is an obligation on the community, not an obligation on the individual. And Megillah is an obligation on the individual that doesn't need a minyan. So Parsha Zachar is like neither of those, that it needs a minyan, but it's a chovas hayachid. And there are those who understand, if I remember correctly, I think Reb Chaim Brisker was makbid, that if he would get the Aliyah for Parsha Zachar, if I'm not mistaken, so unlike every other Aliyah in the Torah, normally the Baal Koreh lanes and the Ola lanes together with him. But for Parsha Zachar, if he was the Ola, he would not lane together with the Baal Koreh, because he understood that the Chiyuv of Zachar is for him to hear Zachar from the Baal Koreh, so therefore even as the Ola, he would have to listen to it from the Baal Koreh. So that's a reflection of this idea that that's how it's supposed to be done. Again, there is a lot of debate from the earlier Makaros, but that seems to be the practice nowadays, that we assume that it has to be with Kriyas HaTorah and it has to be with a minyan. There was a machlokas also about whether Purim could qualify, that we read on Purim, a different Kriya, we read from Parshas Bishalach, of a Yavo Amalek. So could that count? So that was the machlokas, Mishnah Berurah, the Magen Avraham, and others. Is it that we have to just read about the attack of Amalek, or do we have to specifically recall the Torah's instruction to remember Amalek, which is what we read the Shabbos, or we read in Parshas Zachar? So why should it be, if it has to be with a Sefer Torah, and it has to be with a minyan, okay, let's accept all that, but how do we know when it has to be? How do we know how often it has to be? So here, there is a tshuva lechsam sofer, which is actually quoted by others. Not 100% clear if it's consistent with other statements that in the Chassam Sofer. Everything here is a little bit debatable. But the Maram Shik, who is the Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, he quotes from the Chassam Sofer that the idea is, you could have thought that maybe I should remember Amalek every day. It doesn't say in the Torah how often it should be. And he said, how do you know how often it should be? Maybe it could be once a lifetime, maybe it could be once a day. How do you know how often it should be? There are those who do remember it every day. If you say the Sheish Zechiros after davening, so then that seems to be an effort to try to say it every day. But the notion of saying it once a year, so the Chassam Sofer thought it was about the following. If the Torah says you shouldn't forget, so what does it mean to forget? So he assumes that there is a notion of the sheer shikha, that after a certain amount of time you forget, and therefore the Torah is telling you that you shouldn't allow yourself to forget, you should remind yourself before the sheer shikha elapses. So how long is the Shir Shikha? So he says it's 12 months. How do you know that? Based on two Gemaras. One is there's a Gemara in Brachos, It says, "Ein hames mishtakeach min halev el after your base chodesh." That somebody passes away, so he's not forgotten until after 12 months. And the Gemara in the second parak above Metzia, which says that after 12 months, that we can assume that somebody who lost property has given up hope on getting it back. So it says the Chasam Sofer, that's the story, that you have this idea of a shir shukha of 12 months. And therefore, if the Torah tells us that we shouldn't forget a malik, it means we have to do it once a year. We have to remind ourselves every 12 months. So based on that, there were those, Ma'am Shik discusses this as well, who had a new chumra and said, well, then we have a problem if there's a leap year, because a leap year really messes things up because it adds an extra month just when you don't want it, right before that other comes, so you lay in the Zohar in one other, and then right before the next other, we stick an extra month in to now make 12 months elapse. So what should we do? So there were those who recommended that in those years, during the summertime, when they read Parshas Kisetz, that you should have Kavanah to be Yotzei Zohar then, so you shouldn't allow 12 months to elapse. And then Rabbi Yisrael Frank has a truth about this. Do we require that the Baal Koreh has to have Kavanah about this? Does he have to know? Let's see, if this is your personal chumrah, you're the only one in the shul who knows about this. Does the Baal Koreh have to know that he's being Motziyu? It's a whole discussion. But there are those who disagree with this idea on two levels. One is that 12 months doesn't necessarily have to mean a year exactly. I remember Rabbi Willow gave a shir about this. I think it was his mother's first yard site. The yeshiva was learning about Metzia then. So he spoke about all these topics together. And the idea that the year, 12 months, doesn't mean literally 12, 30-day periods. It means that you have the cycle of a year. So if something happened on Hanukkah, by the time the next Hanukkah comes around, it's kind of a reset. If you forget about whatever happened before the previous Hanukkah. So you need to remember things. But if the year happens to be 13 months, so then it's 13 months. It's not 12 months exactly. It's the cycle of the year, which is represented by 12 months. But there are others who debated the whole concept of Ashir Shukha. They didn't think that this really existed. The Sabbat Rav has a truth about this, where he says both the rayas are not so compelling. He says the idea that it is supposed to be the proof from the idea that a mace is forgotten after 12 months, it means that if you're actively trying to get over someone, you're trying to forget someone, so then after a year it starts to work. It doesn't mean that if it's a mitzvah to remember something, you'll forget it after 12 months. That's not necessarily something that flows from that. And the Gemara in Bav Metzia is saying that somebody gives up hope of finding their lost property after 12 months. Doesn't mean they forgot it existed. So he doesn't think either proof is compelling. And he thought that this is simply that Chazal wanted that in order to make the symbolism appropriate, that Chazal connected Parshas Zohar to Purim. Because we have to have Parshas Zohar to remind us of Amalek in order to connect the theme of Haman. So that's the idea. So it doesn't seem like there's really a set time for Zohar on a level in Torah, and therefore it doesn't seem like it's a mitzvah sasesha as man grama. So pashtus, women should be obligated, and that's how many assume, and that's why many tell the women that they have to come to shul also, even if they don't normally come to shul. Parshas Zohar, they do have to come to shul. However, there were those who felt differently, because as a Sefer Achinoch, it sounds like he says that women are Pater from Zohar, it's not clear why. It does not seem to be a mitzvah seisha as man grama. So some suggest, the Macheshes and others suggest, that maybe it's a din in Milchama, and it correlates to Milchama Samalek, and therefore women are Pater because they're Pater from Milchama. So that itself is controversial, without getting into the whole thing about the Gius Bonos and Eretz Yisrael and Shevet Lumi and anything like that, but there are those who point out that Amalek is Mechemes Mitzvah. And the Mishnah says in Sota that for Mechemes Mitzvah, filu kala mechupaso, even a bride from her chuppah goes out to fight for Mechemes Mitzvah. So it's not clear how exactly this works and what exactly is the basis of the idea to say that women are pater. It's a little bit of a ongoing debate, and it's a little bit of an unresolved machlokas on Yom HaZeh, whether or not women are really chayavos in the mitzvah of Zohar. We discussed a few weeks ago that we don't make a bracha on recitation of Zohar, and that some connect that. We have a couple of revi synergies. We've had a couple of opportunities to cross-reference our revis for the past few weeks. So this is such a case that we talked about this a few weeks ago in Parshas Bishalach, that the idea of Maisa Yodai Tovim B'Yam, that God didn't want the Malachim to sing Shira when his creatures were drowning, so too, that even if it's evil people, but if there is a great negativity involved, if there's suffering, if there's death, so then we don't want to rejoice in that and to say Hallel. So by extension, there are those who say, therefore we don't make a bracha either. Others felt the comparison is not really very good, because Hallel, Shirus, you don't want to express joy, that's one thing, but a bracha is not the same thing as Hallel, and the bracha goes with the mitzvah, so there's a whole debate why it is that there's no bracha on the mitzvah of Zachar. One could say that the symbolism of Zachar is that we have to understand that we don't live in a morally relativistic world, as much as we might feel like we do, and that we have to understand that there are things that are evil, and that we're required to be aware of that and to understand that the pole exists, that there is good and bad in the world, and everything is assessed based on that which is good and that which is bad, but it's not simply that everything is relative. And therefore, the Torah tells us that Amalek has no redeeming qualities and has to be understood as such. So perhaps one could say that the idea of reading it from Sefer Torah and reading it with Tzibur, the idea is that we don't want to, we want to convey the message that there are some things which are able to lift up that which is bad. So we believe that the tzibur, the community, can bring schus even to those who are sinners and the like, and the Torah purifies. But maybe the point is here that even with a Sefer Torah and even with a minion, still Amalek is Amalek, and that has to be understood for what it is. But it's very striking, and this I think brings out a very important point, that according to the Rambam, not everyone agreed to this, but according to the Rambam, even though we're obligated to wipe out Amalek, but you can accept Geirim from Amalek, according to the Rambam. So that seems to tell you that Amalek exists as a concept which is irredeemable, but the people are redeemable. That theoretically the individual could leave that category, could decide to no longer be Amalek, and then he would not be subject to such danger. To such a mitzvah. So it sounds like the point is that on the one hand we're being told that there is absolute evil in the world and that that has to be wiped out, but that evil is not about people, that evil is about a certain approach, a certain ideology, but the individuals can leave the ideology. The ideology is objectively bad and is not redeemable, but a human being could theoretically separate himself from that. Hi.
I mean, you just said that somebody from Amalek could convert to Jewish. Is there a concept of somebody from Amalek to just, like, renounce Amalek and still be a non-Jew?
Right, it's a fair question. It would seem like there's a lot to talk about that also. That would certainly be an important middle ground. But the whole thing is a little bit of a debate. There are different midrashim that sound different ways, but this was the position of Rambam took. And there is a Gemara that says that B'nei Bonav Shel Haman Lindu Torah B'nei Brak. The descendants of Haman taught Torah in B'nei Brak. So it seems to be there is such a Masorah, and it's a logical question to ask. But if our whole point is that it's about leaving Amalek, so then presumably you could leave Amalek without becoming Jewish. You could leave Amalek with just accepting the Zion mitzvos. One could say that that's kind of the idea nowadays. Nowadays we don't have identifiable Amalek. It's a question whether Amalek can be extrapolated to an ideology or not, but Metzias says we don't have individuals who are identified as Amalek today. The idea that Chazal had, that Sancheiriv came and was Mevalbel Kol HaUmos, that he came and he messed up all the nations. We can't tell who is who anymore. So essentially that has the same effect, that they don't become Jewish necessarily, but they become separated from the identity of Amalek. So it's really more about the concept of Amalek than it is about any individual necessarily being connected to it. And the individuals theoretically could be separated and could be redeemed one way or another. That's what it sounds like, at least according to some Rishonim. That's a possible approach. But Amalek itself has to be understood for what it is. So just will say one last note, then I'm going to have to run. But what is Amalek? So Amalek, on the one hand, seems like a terrorist. As the Shavar tells us, they attacked from behind. They attacked the weak and the tired and the children. And that was the whole method of attack. But there is also a symbolism, a very surprising symbolism that the Chazal have, that Amalek is associated with Leitzonis. So Leitzonis, we normally translate in modern Hebrew as joking around, as clowning around. So Leitzonis, that's Amalek, doesn't really seem like the appropriate imagery. So Rav Futner has an important essay about this in Pachad Yitzchak on Purim, the first Pachad Yitzchak on Purim. saw recently that the Rav Nevenzahl has a whole maimer along similar lines in the Sichos for Sefer Shmos. I think it was in Parshas Beshalach where he has this essay. That the word "letz" in Talmudic usage and in biblical usage really doesn't just mean joking around. It means cynicism. It means the attitude that nothing is important. And that attitude is incredibly destructive. It's something that we all find a little bit alluring nowadays. Very easy to be cynical. And Oscar Wilde famously said that a cynic is someone who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing, that everything is expensive, that nothing is important. That's the point. And such an attitude, as the Bali Musar said, you can have all the Musar in the world, a little bit of cynicism makes it impossible to get through. It's not going to at all be effective if you have the attitude of a cynic. And the notion of a sense of humor, there's a lot more to say about this, but not a lot of time to say it, so maybe we'll expand on it later. But the notion of a sense of humor that we esteem on Purim, the comedy that we appreciate, believe that the focus is the holy sense of humor, is a sense of perspective, is the ability to be able to know what's important and what's not important, so you can focus on that which is important. And if that's the point, then a malik is the polar opposite. A malik is about saying nothing's important. So that's not an acceptable sense of humor. That's something that undermines the whole value of humor. So Purim, yes, we're into jokes, we're into humor, we're into laughter, but it's crucial that we understand what is a good joke and what's not a good joke, and that the attitude of cynicism, that's a destructive attitude, and perhaps especially having Parsha Zachar before we have Purim gives us an opportunity to focus on just how harmful that is, to make sure that's not a part of the sense of humor that we're cultivating, so that when Purim comes, in this case almost a full week later, we'll have the ability to really hone our Jewish sense of humor and to make sure that we relate to the world with a proper perspective and not, God forbid, with a cynical perspective. Okay, I apologize again for all the moving around of the schedule today. God willing, on Sunday we'll try to finish talking about Shachmanis and Matanis Levyonim, and then we'll continue on Monday. I want to have a meaningful Shabbat Zachar.